just discussing that it's a bit daunting for me to stand up here in a room full of women discussing the menstrual cycle. So I'm glad there's at least one other male in the room. So anyway, I'm Alan Young. Dr. Sands was intending to present this, but he was double booked and is doing another presentation at the same time. And Holly Gentry is actually a student of ours. She was an undergraduate student with us, and this was her senior research project, and she was unable to come as well, but we were proud of her that she undertook such a large project for an undergraduate student. So just a little bit of background. First, just to know that we don't have any relationships to disclose with this. Just a little bit of background. As most of you know your cycles better than I would, I'll still give you a bit of a background on this. Holly, again, who's our student, decided to break it into two primary phases, and the follicular phase, which is the first half of the cycle, and that typically begins with the bleeding phase on day one and goes through day five. And then it ends with ovulation, which then leads into to the luteal phase, which then lasts for the second half of the cycle. And what's unique about these two cycles, or these two phases, is that during the follicular phases, there's a large increase in estrogen, which then leads to the ovulation. And during the luteal phase, there's a large increase in progesterone. So then there's some thought that these may have an impact on physical activity or exercise components because they are steroid hormones. So that was the genesis of this. Holly came up with this idea because just anecdotally some of her friends were saying that they didn't like to exercise while they were menstruating, that they didn't feel good, and that they didn't think that they could have quite the same capacity to exercise or to be physically active. And then there's also some rumors from history about athletic coaches that would change their female athletes' cycles to try to improve performance based on the phase of their cycle, a phase where there's increased estrogen levels or increased progesterone levels and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of circumstantial or anecdotal evidence out there, and there's a little bit of scientific data, but not a whole lot. And again, this hormone flux of the estrogen and the progesterone is really the primary factor, and we all know how hormones can drastically affect everyone, not just females. But from a physical activity standpoint, there is some real data to suggest that these hormones do have an impact. Now, whether they actually affect performance is a little less clear, but there are some physiological variables that can be measured that the estrogen and the progesterone may influence. And then, of course, with the physical discomfort, if there's pain, if there's bloating, those sorts of things just may inhibit someone's ability to be physically active. And to date, there's really no consensus on what the impact is. There are a fair number of studies that have found that exercise capacity is increased during the follicular phase, and there's others that have found that exercise capacity is increased during the luteal phase. So, again, there's little consensus in terms of aerobic activity. Okay, so we're talking about distance running, aerobics, swimming, cycling, step machine, that sort of thing. So aerobic exercises, there's conflicting data. In terms of muscular strength and endurance, resistance training, that type of thing, it seems to be a little bit more clear that there is no relationship, that there's no impact, that the timing of the cycle or the phase of the cycle really doesn't seem to impact muscular strength at all, which I think initially, years and years ago, before there was any scientific data, the thought was, well, maybe the estrogen is actually going to increase muscular strength. Well, now the scientific data suggests that that's just not the case. And with rating of perceived exertion, it's a subjective scale, but it's well accepted in the exercise community as a way of assessing how hard an individual thinks he or she is working. It's just a scale from 6 to 20, and it proves to be very consistent over time within individuals. And so this was a scale that we chose to use as well. And some of what we've seen in the literature is that when there's an increase in estrogen, which again would happen during the follicular phase leading into ovulation, there's an increase in blood plasma volume. And the data is very clear that when there's an increase in blood plasma volume, that there's the potential to increase aerobic capacity or ability to do aerobic exercise. On the flip side, when there's an increase in progesterone, it increases ventilation, which is just the amount of air that you breathe on a minute-by-minute basis. So when there's increased progesterone, even at resting values, females are increasing the volume of air that they're moving at rest, that they're breathing. So again, just some data to suggest that, that potentially the phase of the cycle may have an impact on physical activity levels. So again, the purpose of this study was to determine, do these different phases impact muscular strength, muscular endurance, aerobic capacity, or aerobic exercise ability, and then the rating of perceived exertion. And I think that really was what Holly's primary interest was to find out, do you feel like you're working harder during different phases? Whether you are or not was of interest too, but really, do you feel like you are working harder when you're in different phases of the menstrual cycle? So just very quickly going through what she did. She had 10 college students. These were just average college-age females, moderately active. And she defined moderately active as exercising 2 to 3 times per week. So these were not athletes. These were not runners. These were not competitive weightlifters. They were just average college females who exercised on a semi-regular basis. And they all had normal menstrual cycles to be in the study. Again, average height and weight for college-age females. And I'll get into some of this instrumentation a little bit later. But basically, they did some treadmill exercise, some leg press exercise, and then the 15-point Borg scale is the rating of perceived exertion. Of course, following the approval, she had the individuals come in on 3 different occasions. And this turns out to not be one complete cycle. It's essentially the end of one cycle and the middle cycle was really the bleeding phase. So the 7 days, approximately 7 days prior to bleeding, really is the luteal phase where there should be an increase in progesterone. Then during means that it was during the bleeding phase, the 1 through 5 days, which is the beginning of the follicular phase. And then after represents 7 days after bleeding has stopped, or around 7 days, which should be roughly the peak of estrogen levels. All right, so it's not one complete cycle, it's the end of one and then the beginning of the next. So each time these subjects came in, she had them do a treadmill test. Some of you may know what the Bruce protocol is. It's just a treadmill protocol that's probably the most well-established protocol. Put someone on a treadmill and every 3 minutes increase the speed and the incline until they reach exhaustion. So the goal is to get them to a point where they can't walk or run anymore. They get to maximal heart rate. It's a maximal exertion test. Typically lasts, for college-age females, somewhere around 12 to 14 minutes or so. So they did that test and then also did a leg press test. They had previously done a 1-repetition maximum test to find out what their maximal strength is. And then on the day they came in for the test, she had them do 50% of their maximal and just do as many repetitions as they could with the leg press. And then during each of these tests, rating of perceived exertion was measured periodically. And here's what she found. Although this looks like there's a big difference, it's more a function of the scale. There was no significant difference in this. However, there may be some practical significance. Again, if we're looking at the before cycle during the luteal phase, the during is actually during bleeding, and then after is increases in estrogen leading up to ovulation. So what you can see here, according to this, again, it's not statistically significant, so I have to be careful in making too many assertions here. But there is a mean difference of about 40 seconds during the menstruation period. So was that due to discomfort? Was that due to hormone flux? Unfortunately, the data that was collected in the study doesn't indicate what it was. It just suggests, again, that there was a mean difference, but again, not significantly different. as far as rating of perceived exertion, if you look at, and this is just for the treadmill test, every 3 minutes at the end of each stage, she measured their rating of perceived exertion. Now, an 8 on the rating of perceived exertion scale is light exercise. Once you get up to an 18, it's very hard exercise. Okay, so once they're at a 16, 17, 18, they're pretty close to the end of the test. But what you can see here is, if you compare the three different phases or three different times where they came in, there's really no difference, and again, no statistical difference, but just looking at the means here, virtually no difference at all of the different phases of the menstrual cycle. So again, suggesting here that whether they felt bad, whether there was an increase in blood plasma, whether there was an increase in ventilation, we may not know those things, but from a perception standpoint, these college students felt like it didn't matter which phase they were in of their menstrual cycle, it didn't impact the amount of exertion they were feeling during that exercise. And we see the same thing for the rating of perceived exertion during the leg press test. And she did this immediately following the test. The amount of exertion that they felt, the participants felt like they were doing during the different cycles was not different, regardless of the phase of the cycle. And there's no figure here for the number of repetitions that the participants did with the leg press test, but again, there was virtually no difference. The mean difference ended up being about 1 or 2 repetitions between the different cycles, so no significant difference, and in that one, really no practical significance either. So basically, what Holly concluded from this is that it didn't appear that the menstrual cycle really impacted any of either of the performance measures, being that of aerobic capacity and also muscular endurance, and it also didn't impact the perception. Now again, with the aerobic capacity, potentially we did see a slight decrease in the time during the menstruation phase, but again, not significant, so it's difficult for us to make any true assertions about that. And again, if there's any physiological changes related to plasma volume, this study didn't get into that, so it's difficult for us to make any assertions about it. In terms of physiological and psychological factors, or the psychological factors particularly, again, the participants didn't feel any different regardless of what phase they were in. I would probably suggest that, and this is going out on a limb a little bit, but the duration of the activity for the aerobic exercise was only about 13 to 14 minutes, and it was a maximal exertion test. If the tests were done at sub-maximal intensities over a longer duration, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour, my thought is that there probably would be a greater chance of seeing a difference then in terms of exertion and potentially performance, but probably more in terms of rating of perceived exertion between the different phases of the cycle, but because the duration of the activity was so short, there wasn't enough activity to see a difference in exertion. Now again, that's speculation, but I think that's probably a fair assessment. Again, these students were participants were just the average college age female. I think it would be interesting to see what might happen if there were athletes involved. Anaerobic athletes versus aerobic athletes versus the average college-age female, and in addition, increasing the duration of the aerobic activity and potentially the anaerobic activity as well to see if you could tease out some sort of difference in the perception of exertion as a result of that. But again, based on the data that we have, The finding that we have to report is that there's no significant difference in muscular endurance, aerobic capacity, or perceived exertion between any of the phases of the menstrual cycle. Thanks. Questions now or no? Okay. Any questions? Sure.
So you didn't comment on kind of the baseline characteristics. Most of these women had lots
it's a good question. And I don't know this particular data set of these 10 participants, and it is a small sample size that were in this study. Were they, what group did they fall in? Was it a mix of those that have more difficult menstrual cycles than others, or longer bleeding periods and that sort of thing? I don't know that for sure. And would that impact potentially the results of the study? You would think that it would, especially the perception of effort. I would think that if someone is having a very difficult time just doing day-to-day tasks, if you put exercise on top of that, then yes, you would think that that would have an impact on that. Unfortunately, this data can't answer that question because I don't know exactly who these females were, but it's a great question. Yes. That is correct. I did not mention that, and they were not. Okay. That's correct. Thank you for asking. Any other questions?